You are listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s pop music podcast where we have fun taking pop music seriously, hosted by, you won't forget about him, David Lim, and me, a crazy boy that's feeling so good, Joel Babington. Hello, David. How are you doing?
Joel, this is a big one today, isn't it? I mean, we're going to have some stories today, aren't we?
This is going to be Pop History 101.
Oh, yes. The hits, the fan favorite deep cuts. I mean, we've been saving for this moment. So we're super excited to welcome one of our all-time favorite British pop songwriters to the show. Some of the songs she has written, JB, I mean, the people that she's worked with, these songs have soundtracked our lives for, I would say, almost 20 years. I mean, I don't like to think of time marching on, as we always say on the pod, but these songs bring fun, colour, crying at the disco vibes. Like, it's just all the full spectrum of emotions. She has written for Kylie and Danny Minogue, Rachel Stevens, Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Lana Del Rey, The Saturday, Steps, Annie, Jerry, Nicola Roberts, Will Young, Bananarama. A lot of these songs have been up on my display, as you know, JB. So can we please give a warm Right Back At You welcome to the HR of pop, as Joel Babington would call her, Hannah Robinson.
Hello, Hannah!
Oh my God, I love that so much. That was amazing. Thank you.
How do you feel about the title, the HR of pop, that I have deemed you?
Well, I didn't know that, and I'm going to take it. I thought that was great. Thank you.
Yeah, we just did our recent one of the Sophie episodes. And, you know, we just love every time your name pops up on a track. And I was like, the HR of pop has entered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's lovely. And also, David, I often look at your shelving.
Yes. It is legendary.
Yeah, it is legendary. And it's so neat and so tidy.
I try. I really do try. And we've had a few records that you've worked on up there as well. And it's always, I think it's so funny to see people engaging with it and the kind of nostalgia as well, because it's not always the big hit singles that are up there. You know, sometimes it's like a rare promo copy of something. And it's just, the replies are always super fun.
And also just the fact that you still pop them on there sometimes, like the fact that people remember them. I mean, it's really sweet.
It's lovely. Now I get people in my DMs going, hey, I'm doing a clear out. Do you want any of these? I'm like, yeah, sure. Bring it on.
Absolutely. As always, if anyone is throwing away anything, David will take it. Now, today we have selected some of our favourite songs and artists that Hannah's worked on. But before then, we want to go right back to the beginning of Hannah and your music journey. So, Hannah, how did you get into music and songwriting?
Well, I went to university and did a performing arts course because I left school having no idea what I wanted to do other than the fact that I loved singing, mainly. I could kind of play chords on a piano and I could make things up. I was very good at kind of harmonising. Harmony Club is my favourite thing. But back then, there was just, even though I knew people had songs written for them, it still wasn't something that registered as a possible job.
Yeah.
I mean, now I think you hear about top lining all the time. But back then, I just thought this was a world away, so it didn't even register. And so I went to uni almost to bide time. That brought me to London. And then I obviously left. So I started to answer adverts in Melody Maker and Enemy, which was, you know, happening then. That's how you did it. And I did really funny jobs in Italy, where I'd fly out there and I would cover bands. So I covered All Saints.
Oh, wow.
I covered Steps. I covered the Spice Girls.
Is this for one of those like compilation albums?
Yes.
That get circulated with unofficial vocals or something?
Yeah, and then they kind of sell them for much cheaper and they're played in restaurants. And I remember doing one for Sam, it was a Sam Fox song and I loved it. It was just so much fun. So I did that. And
do
I
you
kind
still
of,
have those?
I probably do in my loft somewhere.
Oh my God, I think we need to get them on streaming.
I mean, we could be in Mykonos having dinner and then suddenly the Hannah Robinson version of a Sam Fox third single is up there.
You know the Steps song, You are only a heartbeat away.
Oh, that one. Stunning. Okay, we'll be hearing that somewhere.
That was one of my favourites.
Wow. Keep your eyes and ears.
That was one of my favourites. I had to be everyone again. And so that was kind of my, I don't know, learning how to be in a studio, learning how to work quickly. Obviously, this wasn't writing. This was just me stacking harmonies and kind of, but doing it quickly. I think I'd do 9 songs in a day.
Wow.
So there was a lot of singing. The journey between me actually doing writing professionally, it took about 10 years. So there was I was 28 when I signed. But so with the people that I was working for in Italy, I connected with some people from Britain that gave me more work like that. But between us, we decided to write original things. It was them that encouraged me to write songs. And I think I did maybe 3 songs with them. So I had then 3 demos that I'd written originally. Now, I think I was quite surprised at how it had gone. It was like, oh, there's a new thing that I can do that I didn't ever consider. So I had these 3 songs. And then with my then, well, he's now my husband, but not the man, not the people that I did the singing with. So I was with my husband at the time that I was doing all this. And we went to Portugal to watch a band that he was working with. And afterwards, we all went back to the hotel. It was a bit, you know, it was a crazy weekend. And there was a manager there, and she was also a bit drunk. And we sat round a piano, because one of the guys from the band was playing the piano. And it was a bit cringe when he looked back, but she said, oh, sing something for me. So in the hotel foyer, I sang for her. And actually, I hated it because I hate doing things like that. But I did it. And then we met up when we got back. And she signed me as a writer. She took the plunge on someone very new. And so it was from there that I was then put in with Pascal.
Wow.
And Paul. Wow. So it kind of went donk, 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 donk. All these just things happen one after the other.
All from that little piano session in the hotel. Wow.
Yes.
And was that, did you sing her an original song on the spot or one of your covers?
Well, I'm assuming that it was a cover because the guy on the piano obviously wouldn't have known my material.
And then when you're saying, oh, I hate doing, I've got these visions, right? You're going, I hate doing this. And then cut to the flashback, you draped across the piano.
I'm, if you get me to sing in a studio with someone, I am quite extrovert, but in a hotel foyer.
That's a different story. Yeah. But it's so good that you took that plunge. So there begins your songwriting journey there. Do you remember the first like song you got placed? What would that be? Because we're looking back and we're like, S Club Juniors,
I think it was S Club Juniors. I think it was It's Only You and Sail On Through. I obviously had a thing with the ooey sound back then.
And how did those come about? Like, how was that for you?
So by then, I'd signed to Native and they were a publishing company. So they signed me on the songs that I did with Pascal and Paul. And that was... But that was basically the Rachel Stevens catalogue.
Oh my God.
I know, we'll get onto that in a minute. So I'd done all that. So they signed me on those songs. And then obviously as a writer, they sent me the brief for, I don't know if I'd already done them. I'm pretty sure I would have heard about the brief for S Club Juniors because it was kind of that retro pastiche.
Yeah, there were a lot of 60s kind of influences on the first album, wasn't it? Simon Fuller's a bit of a fan of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, if you put me in that situation and give me a very, very clear brief, I'm actually much better at that. I find it much easier.
Did you know that they were kids and how old they were when you went in writing?
Yes. So in my head, it was going to be kind of teeny boppy.
Yeah.
Teeny boppy, pastiche. I remember in my head I was thinking, right, young, like Burt Bacharach,
wow,
like Dionne Warwick. I remember thinking that, but make it for kids.
I hope you like these lines, 'cause
and I really enjoyed it. And I actually did it with my husband, so because he's an engineer, so he kind of made it all sound lovely, and we did that together. And they got used really quickly. So I've just signed, just had my first, you know, cut, and it's like, oh, I can do this.
Wow. So that is really just like go, 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 kind of straight after. Appreciate 10 years to sort of get there, but then like go, go, go once it gets going.
Yes, because usually people get signed and then it takes a long time. But I think I'd done so much before.
Yeah, you were like, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
We want to start now jumping in into what we've picked out. But do you feel like having these S Club cuts then had you in mind at 19 Management for other artists?
Yeah, I do. I just remember the one thing in particular that really caught 19's, ear for me was Some Girls. That was the one that they thought, oh, hang on, because I'd obviously had the S Club thing, but there was something about Some Girls that they got excited about. And it kind of made them feel differently about me.
Well, with that, Hannah, you've become our third co-host because you have so naturally and wonderfully segued right into what we're doing. So we're going to kick things off with Rachel Stevens, Rachel Lauren Stevens, as I like to give her the full name. Some Girls. Tell us the origins. How did it all kick off?
Okay, Some Girls. It was right at the beginning again. I was being put in with different writers. I hadn't been with that many people. I think I'd... Where had I been? So I'd obviously done the stuff at home. Then I randomly went to... I don't even know if you know him, but I went to Nick Kershaw's house.
Yes.
I know.
I used to work on Rewind Festival, so...
80s guy. So I went there, did something with him. I was being kind of sent to different places. And then my manager rang and said, you're going to go in with a guy called Richard X.
Wow.
He's just done Sugar Babes.
Freak Like Me and all that. Wow.
Freak Like Me and had a number one. And for some reason, I got super anxious and nearly didn't go.
Oh, my God.
I know. I used to do it. I used to do this when I was younger. I'd get panicky and think, I don't want to go there and be rubbish. Does that at all make sense?
Yeah.
It used to really worry me.
Especially given the time that you were meeting him, you know, he's this hot new DJ mashup guy. You know, there was so much press around Richard and the kind of underground mashup bootleg thing that he was doing that suddenly everyone in the mainstream said, oh, what's this? So I totally get that. Yeah.
Hannah, this is your sliding doors moment.
Yes. So my manager said, you'd be mad not to, you know, everything's fine. Don't worry, you know, pep talk. We got on immediately. I have this thing now. If I'm wheezy laughing, like really laughing till I wheeze, then we know it's a good thing. So I had a really just great day with him. We really hit it off. So he played me the track and I loved it. It sounded exactly, it was like ready to go. It was really good.
Yeah.
And one of the first things I sang was the da-da-da-da-da, like that, over the top. And he's very good at immediately going, that's the thing that we're doing. So that's what I love about him. So I can just do things. He's listening the whole time and he picks it.
And the instinct is quick, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, that's like gold dust.
It's reassuring as well.
It is, and sometimes it's like when I'm working by myself, I don't... You start questioning. It's like, should it be that melody I just did or that melody?
Yeah.
You can't always go by hunch when it's just you. You need that person. So, yeah, we basically wrote the song together. It happened quite quickly. It was the first meeting. And, yeah, when we delivered that song, well, a lot happened with that song because obviously you probably know that more than one person wanted that song. Ended up being a bit of an issue. But Yeah, and then we've been friends and co-writers ever since.
That is incredible. I mean, the strength of, like, this first meeting has cemented, A, one of the most legendary pop songs of the 2000s, but also incredible collaborators with you and him, still going strong to this day. Thank bloody God you did go to the session that day.
I know, exactly. And we just have this, we both quite like doing, I don't know, just doing something that's a bit, not odd, because they're really poppy, but fun, you know, you're often kind of singing about something and people don't always quite know what it's about.
But that's exactly what Some Girls is, you know, it does have like a little bit of a darker undertone to it, which is super surprising it got chosen as, was it Sports Relief or Comic Relief?
Sports Relief.
I mean, how did that happen? How
did the inspiration and the conversation come to when it came to writing the lyrics for it?
I've got to be careful here. I mean, we both have a very, in a funny, fun way, a dark side. So when we get chatting, we keep like pushing things and it's, you know, it's like safe space. So it's, you know, it is kind of the casting couch. We did talk about specific things, but I think we'll just keep that hushed. But it was, yeah, we just tend to do, if we're singing about something and it's got like a twist or we know what we're talking about, but it's not super obvious, that's when our best stuff happens. As soon as it's about something kind of more vanilla and more meh, I just clam up. I find it really difficult to write like that. It has to be something a bit odd. And I go into sessions now and I try to encourage that. No one seems to want to do it. People now just want to talk about, I don't know, going out and losing their phone and getting, you know. And I'm getting there, but it's completely different. I think that's why I quite like doing the K-pop now, because you can do something, you know.
Conceptual.
Yeah, and a bit odd.
That is why we love it. Because it feels kind of like if 2000s pop had stayed and levelled up, that's kind of what K-pop is.
Yeah, absolutely. With amazing videos and like
big budgets. I
love it. Whereas we're in a different place in the UK. And even though I do work with new artists, sometimes I can, I'm not quite on the same page.
So, okay, Joel, we got to get back to Rachel because,
is like, we digressed.
This is Joel's number one. So,
Was it you and Richard going in and it was like, just meet Richard, have a vibe, have a session? Or was there a brief you two were working on for this song?
I don't think there was. I think he presented me with a track and I don't think we were never going in and doing something for Rachel.
How did it get to Rachel? What was the journey? Were you guys thinking, I saw one, obviously we all know the Geraldine situation, but was there... You guys were saying maybe Girls Aloud were in mind initially, or is that just really vague?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they were, because not long after that, we did go in with Sarah, actually. But I think it was a time, wasn't it, where there were artists and girl bands, and Native was kind of connected to 19. They were all in the same building. So anything I sent automatically got sent up there if it was deemed good enough. And that song was like flagged as a decent track immediately. So we got a call saying Rachel wants to do it, and Richard was super, super keen for Rachel to do it. And actually, when it comes to who the artist is that will cover a track that he's producing, I mean, it's his choice. It's not my choice. But then, I don't know how it happened, but the song was also sent to Jerry's, either I think it was his A&R.
Drama ensues.
I think by this point, Rachel was like in the diary, it was hers. I was also sent in to work with Jerry, not with Richard.
This is Passions, right? Yeah. The third solo album.
Yeah. And... I was waiting for her. I remember she arrived at the studio. She had little dog in tow. And there you go. That's a random fact I remember. I remember she had the dog with her. And she just kind of stood in front of me. She said, I have such a good idea for a middle eight on Some Girls.
And you're like, oh, what Some Girls?
Yeah. And I went, oh, very naively, I just said, oh, that song, someone else is doing that song. I was careful enough. I didn't say it was Rachel because I just thought that would be not a good vibe. I said, someone else is doing that song. She went, what do you mean? I'm doing it.
Oh, my God.
I'm doing it. And I said, no, we're here today to write something new. Like, because I was with Ian Masters, and Ian's got loads of things for us to do, blah, blah, blah. And then in front of me, she called her manager. So I'm just standing there. And I hear Jerry say, I'm standing with Hannah Robinson, and she's just told me that I'm not doing Some Girls, and I need you to sort that out, please. And I'm just there going, I want to die.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong. She was cool. It was her manager that then called my manager and said, if this song isn't given to Jerry, Hannah will never work in this town again. Quote.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was absolutely devastated.
What about hang on, I don't get to choose who the song's going to.
Well, I know, and also I'd been signed to Native for about 3 months. I was absolutely, you know, I was completely fresh. I'd never really worked with anyone, and I'd gone from, I hadn't built myself up to working with big artists. Mm. So I was...
This was a deep end situation. Yeah.
I mean...
And it don't get bigger than a solo Spice Girl, so that can be quite intimidating.
I know.
But ultimately they decided, look, it's Rachel's track, and we're definitely going to talk about the Jerry Sessions, because one of my favourite songs ever you did together, we'll cross that bridge then. But look, it's out of your hands. It's Rachel's.
Yes. Yeah.
And did Jerry ever record it? This is the last thing I'll ask about the Jerry and this bit situation.
Did she record Some Girls?
Yeah.
No, but she had learnt it at home.
Didn't we all?
It's like a fever dream when I talk about it.
So, you know, now it's such a huge hit. And in memory, you're like, well, Rachel had Sweet Dreams, huge number two, this huge number two. But people forget she'd had Funky Dorian this time, which was charted, I think, lower than 20. So it was a bit of a interesting time.
Yeah.
As quoted, I think, from Pop Justice, she came to save her career, but she ended up saving pop. Wholeheartedly agree with that, with this track. How was your experience then, you and Richard, working with Rachel and recording this track?
Obviously, I'm all for charity records because they're a great thing. But I just kind of, I sometimes wonder, I don't know, I just think about the video. I think I've said this before on the video for me is just, I think it's horrendous. I don't know why they had her materialising from the sewers. I still don't get it.
Is this like a feminist movement? You know, the girls are coming up. It's an uprising.
I know,
but
why were they in the sewers in the first place? I mean, I think it could have been done so much better, but, you know, we can't have it all.
Sewers have never been so glamorous, Hannah. Does it kind of feel like letting your babies go in a way, in terms of, like, you and Richard have created this masterpiece, but then things like the video and where it's going is so out of your hands?
Yeah. In those days, it really did feel like that. As soon as it went... I mean, Richard always liked to have control over production and who was doing it. He always had, like, a preferred vision. But, yeah, once it's gone, that's it. You get the video back and you just sit around and critique it. It's quite funny.
Also, we must say, because... obviously, Come and Get It is one of our favourite albums of all time. You've got such a signature on this. Crazy Boy is one of my most played Rachel Stevens songs. I Will Be There. Also, B-sides like Never Go Back, Waiting Game, which I love.
And of course, So Good.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think that was the first song I wrote with Pascal and Paul.
Oh, wow.
Was it just Pascal, that one? Some were Paul and some were Pascal and Paul. I can know. I Will Be There was definitely Pascal and Paul. I remember vividly doing that because I just thought it's funny, I can just visualise the chords happening, and then we did this thing where we reversed it, so the chords then reversed for the chorus. Oh, I love that. I love the feel of that song. Is it okay?
Is it okay if I meet you never? Is it alright if I wait? incredible.
It is stunning. But, I mean, it must be so special to be like, okay, these were the songs that you started your journey with quite early on. And then how did it feel to see it interpreted on Rachel's project?
I think it was actually a relief, because when I did those songs originally, it was kind of, you think they're for you.
Mm.
And there was always something niggling me that, oh, I'm not sure I'm completely comfortable. I couldn't visualise me doing the whole pop star thing, even though I was kind of just dipping my toe in. I think it was just something then that you don't just go straight into writing for other people. It has to be for yourself. I mean, I really didn't, like, you know, play with that for too long, that idea. I made a decision very quickly. So when someone else did them, someone like Rachel, I loved it. It's like, it's the best outcome. So I was super happy. And they, you know, they turned out how I'd envisaged they would. So it was great.
So you teased earlier, you said, you know, when you had these demos and you got assigned, and it was most of those tracks that ended up going to Rachel. What was the journey there? So was it that, all right, we've had some girls, let's see what else Hannah Robinson has. And you were like, here you go.
So basically, my manager went in to see Native, people at Native, and she played So Good. And they said, we're interested in signing Hannah. What else does she have? So my manager then sent a load of other songs that I don't even know what they were, that weren't my best. Her plan was for them to hear some other stuff and go, okay, and so she could kind of keep like building up to better songs. But actually, my publisher turned around and said, we nearly didn't sign you.
Because that almost backfired.
It massively almost backfired, because she said, you know, they played So Good in a meeting and then followed it up with, you know, what's this? So I nearly didn't have a deal at all, and then all of a sudden, like, other songs were sent in. And that was like,
but So Good was so good that it just, they,
well,
just
that opened
do
the
it.
Door, then the door nearly closed, and then it was all fine. But
and I imagine Crazy Boys was done after Some Girls with Richard.
Yes, that was the next one we did. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of like, okay, we're on a winning streak now. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go sexy electro. Yeah.
I know. Because what happens is as soon as you write something that's kind of good for someone, you have to do more.
Yeah.
And actually, there is a pressure there, because not every single song, and I realise that now, not every single song is going to be up there. And you have to be content with that. But back then, when I was younger, I used to get really worked up about it. I wanted everything to be as good as the previous, and it never was, inevitably.
Well, you know, these songs have stayed on in our hearts for like almost 20 years.
Well, that's lovely. And you say you like Crazy Boys, which is so, it means so much, because at the end of the day, we wrote that. And actually, you could just kind of tell, maybe from, you know, record company, the record companies don't feel like you do about everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's business to them.
Oh, yeah. And it can be a real downer.
Yeah. No, I mean,
so I'm glad someone likes it.
Yeah, but I mean, I hope you see on social media, like, the Come and Get It album is so beloved in pop.
I know.
I mean, I've had it as a birthday cake, the top of my birthday cake a few years ago. And because my birthday is the day before Rachel's. So I was like, I need a Come and Get It birthday cake.
Because do you know Peter Lorraine?
We do. Yeah.
You do, don't you, David? Yeah, because Peter's always... He was one of the first people to tell me how loved Come and Get It was, because at the time, I thought it had failed.
Mm.
So he says... He's always like, that is a fan favourite. And I see now that it is still on people's lists. So how great is that?
It's a shame streaming wasn't around then, because it was literally the number one most played album on my iPod. And then... has just consistently stayed with me. And I think that's the joy of what we find as pop fans now on social media. As kids and teenagers in this era, we all felt so like singular and alone, because a lot of this stuff wasn't, you know, now it feels like anything goes, but we all loved this so passionately.
You know, Joel was listening to it in Essex. I was in Melbourne, had to import my copy of Rachel's album, And I had to wait till I had enough pocket money to do that. So it wasn't actually close to release. It took years for me to actually get the physical copy. And I remember like going through the booklet, seeing all the names. I mean, by this time, the internet was already a thing. So I knew all the names that were associated with the tracks. But just to be able to hold it, I was like, oh my God, it's so exciting. Copy. And Joel and I are forever petitioning for it to come out on vinyl. So...
Maybe
Hannah,
you
put
know
in
that,
a good word. Send that email.
You know what? I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet because I know what other albums of that era have gone to vinyl. I think it's only a matter of time. It was funny the other day. I was driving near my house in North London, and I had to suddenly put on the brakes because someone was coming at me, and it was Rachel and her mini.
There we go.
That's an inspiration for the next song. Yeah.
I kind of like, I was really grumpy, and then I just saw her and I thought, oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, Rachel Stevens' comeback single, Tailgate.
All right, we've been biting your head off about Rachel for long enough. Let's go on to the next artiste.
Look, I mean, Hannah, you talked about some girls being so pivotal to the start of your journey there with Rachel, but you really were start of the journey for another artist who I absolutely love, Annie. Chewing Gum, the debut single. Now, again, this is done with Richard X. So talk me through this time. When did you first meet Annie? How did this project come about?
Right. So Annie, it's funny actually, because when I say to kind of, you know, my gay friends, I've worked with Annie, they know which one. And if I say it to anyone else, they assume it's Lennox. And I go, no.
We love it's just Annie Lennox, no shame.
No, I know, this, but it's like, I've really noticed there's this thing. You go, Annie, they're like, yeah, I'm chewing gum, and like, Annie Lennox, it's just hilarious. Anyway, so by this point, we were kind of feeling very comfortable with each other, Richard and I. So we were free to, there was this freedom to do whatever we wanted.
It was the same year as Some Girls.
Yeah.
So it's like winning streak.
Yeah, here. So it was just... I mean, it was just so much fun to be able to do these things. And he was already, I didn't know about Annie, but he was a fan and they were in touch. And he wanted to write a song for her because she was quite happy, because she's a talented writer. I honestly think sometimes when you've got like a talented writer, they're happy to either take a song because they're relaxed about it. They're happy to co-write. So she was very cool. He said, I'd really like to write the song for her, and I've got this idea for a track. And he wanted to call it either Chewing Gum or Bubble Gum, and would I blitz some ideas, which I did. So I, in my books, wrote a load of stuff about, I don't know, like, you know, because we'd talked about it being about a boy, and I had this idea of it being stuck to your shoe, and, you know, it was kind of just like a metaphor for... being with someone.
And that most famous line in the chorus, you think you're chocolate but you're chewing gum,
you like, know is... And also, but I have to give credit to Richard's girlfriend, because it was something that she'd said randomly as a one-off in the house, and we nabbed it.
Genius. Let's have her around more.
Yeah. I know, I mean, but that's fine, that's kind of what happens if you know, you hear something, you, I don't know, it can inspire. I think there is a place in this world for that song again. I don't know how. I don't know why.
It could have like a Saltburn-style resurgence. You can definitely see this.
I'd be happy with it appearing on Coronation Street, but I'm just saying, it's like...
chewing gum on the cobbles. Oh, what's this stuck to my foot?
Yeah, the Rovers. Yeah, so... yeah, I don't know. There's just something... I think that one's quite... magical, actually. I don't think of it as ordinary. I think of it as, oh, it can might kind of prick
you
your
know what's
up.
Really fun about that song that I really love, it does have like a it's almost like a musical number, because you've got a kind of call and response.
Yeah,
in the verses you've got, you know, the girls kind of asking Annie, oh, what's your secret, tell us how you get boys, and then she kind of answers in that really kind of not snobby, but it's kind of like, oh, whatever, kind of.
I mean,
that
can
kind
you
of cool girl energy.
I remember saying at the time, because obviously that's me at the beginning, and then it's Annie.
I
said to Richard, is it obvious it's two different people? Because I think we sound similar.
So that is actually your vocals that's on it.
Annie and I are doing the call and response.
Wow.
Incredible.
I know.
So you've got Chewing Gum. Obviously, it became a big success and it really broke Annie, not just here in the UK, but internationally as well. You follow up with another song on the album, Me Plus One. I mean, were you... Because I look at Animal, the first album credits, it seemed like it was already mostly done, maybe from her side. So...
Yeah, because she'd had the song called Greatest Hit, hadn't she?
Yeah, that was like an underground single, yeah.
Right, so we sent Chewing Gum, we sent Me Plus One, and then we did, and I can't remember what came first, if it was Antonio or I Know Your Girlfriend Hates Me. I think Antonio might be first because Richard, again, it was in a weird time. Pop music was having a funny turn. And he decided to release that himself, Antonio. I mean, he made that happen, and then other things happened with that song. Much bigger things. So bigger things happen with Antonio than Antonio itself. Amazing. And then I Know Your Girlfriend Hates Me. That's
very interesting because that was, 4 years after Chewing Gum?
Yeah, and I think then she kind of got into that whole... She was signed, it was a bigger label, lots of people writing with her. And she actually sent us that little noodle of going... Like that. So she, I mean, that's what I mean. It was kind of like sometimes she led, sometimes we led. And I loved working with her. She was great. One of my
favorites. Absolute genius. We love it.
I'd love to keep working with her. Maybe there's no reason why that wouldn't happen again. I think artists kind of go off and do their thing and experiment and come back. I mean, at the moment, actually, we'll get on to Sophie shortly. Maybe.
Thank you, third co-host. Let's move on to our next act. So, speaking of people that you have worked with a lot, I want to say arguably, obviously, you know a lot more than us, but this seems like the singer that you've potentially worked with the most out of everyone, Sophie Ellis-Bextor. Now, the song we want to spotlight on is 2010's Bittersweet. But in general, do you remember your first time meeting and working with Sophie?
Well, firstly, Bittersweet is actually my favourite song that I've done with her.
Brilliant.
We love it too. We love it. We've been raving about it. Honestly, it's just like as soon as this murder thing happened, we're like, okay, the next song we all need to put our efforts in together as the pop community
sadly,
is to get Bittersweet back up the charts.
Sophie and I often, we've discussed this more than once, it didn't do very well.
Something about the timing of it, it's just, yeah.
But, maybe, I mean, and I do believe that. It is, and we had a great time writing that. But I remember, so Bittersweet was actually, what did you ask me before? You asked me what we did first.
Yeah, or even just like your memories of working with Sophie first. Doesn't even matter what the song was.
It was the third album, wasn't it? It was Trip the Light Fantastic. You had Me and My Imagination as the single. The second single off that album. So I imagine that was maybe the first time you started working together.
There was also Dear Jimmy in 20 that was released earlier, but then has finally
come out.
So
Dear Jimmy and Me and My Imagination were written with the same producer, Matt Prime, but I don't feel like they were our first sessions. I'm wondering if Pascal was our first and what that would have been. Because then as it progressed, then she invited me onto the session with Biff, and that's when we did Bittersweet. All I know is with Sophie, it's more than just, for me, I can't speak for her, for me, it's more than just an artist that I've written with. I consider her a friend. We have a similar humour. I mean, we are currently writing together.
And We wanted to ask.
And I did say to her, because she texted me in 2022, and said, oh, I'm really feeling like I'd love to do some pop? Shall we do some pop? And I went, I would love to. Then I didn't hear from her for a while. I think she went off doing bits and bobs, touring and stuff. Then August 2023, I get another text. I know it's been ages, but I want to do the pop album, and this time I'm ready to get some dates in the diary. Shall we start with November? So I said yes. We couldn't actually get it together, so we've only just started recently. And then obviously the Saltburn thing happened.
Yeah.
And we were working together just the other day, and I said, no one is going to believe you that your pop album was manifested.
Planned.
Before, yeah. Everyone's going to think you've just gone, right, I need to do a pop album. And that's the exact opposite of what Sophie is. Sophie's very authentic, does not get swept up. She enjoys the stuff that happens, the whirlwind, but she doesn't then do that thing where it's like, right, I need murder part two. And
yeah,
there's
no desperation.
No,
there.
And I think actually that's why she is one of the few people that of that time that manages to just keep doing it. I think she's incredible. I think she looks incredible. I think her voice, I mean, I know that voice in a on the first note.
Yeah, it's distinct.
Yes, yeah. Super distinct. And I think she's, it sounds like I'm fangirling. I am fangirling. But
I do it all the time.
I think she's super funny. I mean, we don't stop laughing in our sessions. We do 1 hour writing, 5 hours wheezy laughing. And I think she's intelligent. She's talented. I mean, it's for me, it's the best sessions of all.
Wow.
So why is Bittersweet your favorite? Because you do have a lot. And I mean, I would say, yes, I love Bittersweet, but China Heart, actually, from Trip to Light Fantastic, yeah, is one of my most played Sophie songs.
Oh, I haven't heard that for a long time.
That is, I actually think it's a song of my life. Oh. So
okay,
you've given me two of those moments, and we'll get to the other song later.
China Heart is a very Sophie lyric. Do you know what I mean? Can you hear that? Sophie, it's like, that's a Sophie China Heart. Do you know what I mean? It could have been any, but that's, she's got great lyric ideas. That's her.
Every night, every day, I am the girl with the China heart. Lock and key guarding, so look, but I can't let you touch. Hungry dogs will chase you.
It ended up being 2010, but I feel like some of the stuff you've done with her, like Starlight, maybe even Bittersweet, were a few years before.
I just remember we were both on a baby journey at the same time. So I went to her house, and I didn't know if it was because I had a baby or she did, but if it's 2010, that's going to be her baby, I think, because we were constantly with babies. But I remember sitting in her room in her house, and Biff was there, and he brought the track from Freemasons, which, again, you hear the tracks, it's like, oh, I love it, straight away. And she was feeding a baby, and I remember then I was holding the baby, so we were kind of, it's bonkers, but it was so lovely. And I think it was a really fun session. Obviously, I remember it because of the kid factor, which is just like, oh, look at where we are. But also, there was something about when it was a one-off, and I think I had a dictaphone, and I literally just went da 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 like that, and it was like, oh god, because it kind of felt like a weird melody. Yeah. Oh god, I'm going to forget it. Da 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 da. And I remember like Biff singing it back to me because he was remembering it, because I desperately didn't want to forget this odd scale.
Wow.
And then we jumped on it.
It was very distinct, yeah.
And then so I sang the rising section, and then Sophie just went, your love is big, like that, and wow, that was it, chorus done. It was just perf, loved it. So I think that's
it,
why
it's that kind of mix of melancholy, yeah, with like the dramaticness.
I know.
Of it,
is it melancholy,
also, she described
is it joy?
It as a bit of a sexy affair song.
Oh, well, I guess lyrically,
yeah,
but maybe obviously with an affair there is kind of, I know, it's happy sad.
I know I shouldn't go, but something makes me crave the heat. Your love is bittersweet.
I love that. And I again, that was one I was gutted. I just thought, why isn't anything doing as well as I'd hope? But that's life.
I think as well, though, that is such like a funny time for pop. But it's another one of those, though. But for the people that it is for, it is so beloved.
I know. I think my fear back then was that I kind of felt like I'd put Rachel in the pop cemetery. And I didn't want to then put Sophie in the pop cemetery. I mean, it's just a horrible feeling. You want to invigorate, not dampen, you know?
Yeah. But, hey, it's awful that you felt like that. But what I think you actually did was, unfortunately, probably whatever Rachel had put out in that time, or also whatever Sophie had put out in this time, it was probably like nothing.
Oh, no, I know. I kind of, in hindsight, I understand that.
Rachel especially, you've actually cemented her in pop legendary cool status, because it's those that music for us that lives forever.
Yeah.
Like, people will always say to me, Joel, you still always talk about this like it's a brand new release. Like, it will always be fresh forever cool for us.
Yeah. And I it's such a nice thing to hear you say that. And it means a lot. And I think looking back, yeah, I mean, clearly I can see that something was cemented there, because it keeps coming back in, you know, conversation.
And I would even say the Make a Scene album, the fourth Sophie album, does have a bit of that kind of cult status to it.
Hugely.
But you've had this experience of working with her across several projects by this point, I would imagine.
Yeah.
How were you feeling about her going into a clubbier space? Because before Bittersweet came out, there were two big kind of dance collabs. Were you comfortable with kind of, you know, exploring that space and that big club sound with her? Like, how was that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, when you're presented with tracks that, like, instrumentals that fill that brief, I mean, you have to understand, like, Freemasons at that time, they would turn a song into an even bigger song by remixing it. So they had this magic.
Yeah.
So
the Faith Evans record, like, yeah.
Well, I like the Kelly Rowland.
Kelly Rowland, yeah. It was this time as well.
Yeah, I was always kind of spinning around in my kitchen to that. But
so were we.
So, yeah, I mean, I was just quite happy. When I think Sophie has great taste. So if she's enthusiastic about something, you're with her.
The kitchen disco, she was like, this is so amazing for Sophie. You couldn't think it would be getting any bigger or better. Like, this is proper resurgence for her. Then more stuff happens. Then the Saltburn thing happens. And it's just huge everywhere. There's like a layer of like, smugness is the wrong word, but to pop fans, you're like, yeah, about time, everyone.
Yeah,
it's,
I know.
Pride.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, from Sophie, she just seems to be like beaming and enjoying every minute of it. And yeah, no desperation whatsoever. Just, it's like, great.
Well, in her words, Sophie describes herself as quite measured. So
British.
Yeah, I know. So she's definitely enjoying, I think I've said this way, she's definitely enjoying, like, I was with her when she knew she was going to do the Jimmy Fallon thing.
Wow.
And I haven't seen her since then, but I really hope that was as fun as it looked. Because it just looked, I think there was a picture of her in the corridor, like, laughing. Yeah. And I thought, she just looks like she's having a great time. So, and then she just comes back on the plane and then goes to, I don't know, goes into half term with the family. I mean,
yeah,
she's got it all covered.
Wonder Woman, yeah.
Yeah,
and yeah, so she's enjoying it, but not getting carried away.
Look, speaking of disco, and, you know, we're talking about clubbier sounds and the kind of records that you're doing at this time in the early 2000s, Hannah.
Yeah.
I must share one of my favourite Jerry songs of all time, Love Never Loved Me.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Now, you're behind that one as well.
Yeah.
Tell us a story about that song, because I've been waiting 20 years, almost 20 years, actually. It came out in 2005.
Well, I do remember, I've always got funny stories with my Jerry sessions. Now, that's actually one of the songs that was more, I don't know, it was a bit deeper.
Yeah.
But before I talk about that, usually Jerry would often come in with a zany idea. And actually, I would rather have a zany idea than a vanilla idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
What would the ideas be? What sort of
thing? She'd walk in. I've got an idea. The chorus is going to go. And it's funny because I poo-pooed this idea and I have never forgotten it. So I often wonder, should it have been a thing? Okay, so she came in and she said, I want the chorus to go. I want a Whopper, fuck the Big Mac. and I said, oh, Jerry, I just don't think we'll be allowed to do that. And she went, no, it will be fine. And she was like singing this Whopper, the Big Mac thing. And I said, and also it's kind of pro Whopper, it's against the Big Mac. And I just thought, oh my God, what am I going to do with this?
You're going to upset two big fast food chains and neither of them will use it.
I know, but also Jerry was such a big personality and a big artist. It was often quite difficult to dissuade, you know?
Yeah.
But also, she's got that kind of bravado and that kind of zaniness to be able to carry off that kind of lyric.
Well, I know.
I mean, if you had done it, it would be like the Just Eat song right now, wouldn't it?
Honestly, I can't tell you how often I sing that still. So if I see an advert, I sit there going, I want a Whopper, fuck the Big Mac. Like in a like Jerry accent.
That's a very good mimic of Jerry, actually. You've got the drawl.
Yeah. I just think about it so much. I think about it too much. But should I have done something with that? I don't know. I think for me, I was thinking, what will the record company think when we deliver this? So I do like the fact that I think a lot of when she was in the Spice Girls, a lot of the kind of mad bonkers things came from her. And it is super important as an artist to have that. But it's about, I guess it's about sorting the wheat from the chaff. But I said no. So anyway, yeah, we went on to write other things and one of them was Love Never Love Me. And I do remember thinking that was beautiful. Ian did a great job. Mm. And there was the lyric, I'd already done the like another rising scale, which obviously seems to be my thing. But she was definitely, I think she was quite big on that lyric that you can't steal a heart that's already stolen. And I thought that was lovely.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? She had really good ideas.
And I mean, I don't want to out anyone, but I've taken back virginity, that lyric.
Yes, that's 100% Jerry, can you tell?
Thank you for confirming. Yes.
Well, I think actually it's really important to highlight the contribution of the artists. I know we take it for granted sometimes, you know, they go in with writers, but I'm not there to, if we're working together, it's both of us.
Mm.
And I think it's really important to know what they did that made that song special. And more often than not, the special elements do come from them because it's them.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm just kind of helping out and...
Yeah, fuck the Big Mac.
You're there to say no to certain things as well.
Please. I bet you never forget that.
I'm not. It's already like living rent-free in my head. But I mean, this really is, I think, considered like the lost single off the album and really should have been a single off the album.
Do you know, if I had a pound for every time someone said that to me, but I'd have £3.
I mean, this album era, I don't know at what point you got brought in, because the other songs you did for this album, There's Always Tomorrow, Let Me Love You More on the mid-tempo side. So did you feel like a shift in direction happening while you were doing this?
I mean, she's always liked kind of that Latin thing. So there was an element of that. She always had that side. And I think sometimes, like, as well as the zany fun side, there is this, like, depth to her.
Absolutely.
I don't want to call it a sadness either. But she is a deep thinker and she does wear her heart on her sleeve and... There was always, you know, sometimes there was romance things. You never knew who you'd get each day. So there'd be days where she's met someone. So it was like, oh, I'm going to leave London today. I'm flying to LA into the sunset. I mean, everything was always so romantic and so, I don't want to say dramatic either, but it was, that's how she saw her life. It was kind of, you knew exactly what was going in by her face each day. It's like, she's in love. This is amazing. Oh, something bad's happened in the press. I mean, you would always know. And then the song would then come from that. Always.
My love tonight, knowing it's not goodbye, leaving my heart at the door. Keep it warm and true, giving it all to you. I'm coming back for more, so let me love you now.
So the songs that we've written will have 100% been based on how she was feeling at that time. So Love Never Love Me, she was going to be in a certain place about something. I think at that time she was really looking for love and it wasn't happening.
I know. That's why it was my song at uni. I mean, I was like really resonating with that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we all do at some stage, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, please tell me that didn't come out of the session that you had the standoff about Some Girls. These songs came...
Well, it might have been another day, but it was certainly that time.
I mean, maybe Some Girls was the losing. It was the inspiration of Love, Live and Love.
I know, you know, yeah. Honestly, because she had to take the dog for a walk and come back. It was... Gosh, I broke my heart over that, honestly. I remember calling Native and I was ugly crying.
Oh no.
Yeah. And he was laughing, saying, look, this is just going to seem, it's not a big deal in the future, don't worry. And yes, you will still work in this town again, Hannah, don't worry, you know, because I thought that was a career ender.
Yeah, 3 months in and done.
Actually, well, Love Never Love Me. No, I think that was in the UK, because we then went to LA. Again, she suddenly said, spontaneously, have you been to LA? And I went, never. She went, I'm going to take you. And that is, again, very her. Next minute, I was on a flight.
Is this when your hotel got upgraded?
Yes.
And because she dropped her name and got you upgraded, was that?
Yeah, it's when she spelt her name out very slowly.
Yeah, that's she's one got of the quite best stories I've ever
I'm glad
heard.
She said Jerry instead of Geraldine because I'd have been there all day. But it was the most bizarre thing. And yeah, all of a sudden, I'm still in my hotel room and there's flowers everywhere.
Oh.
I know. I mean, do you mean she's awesome? It's never a dull moment.
She'd gotten over the Some Girls thing. She'd left the era of you'll never work in this town again and into let's go to LA.
The way I, kind of the way I am, but I do, there's an element of guilt that I never did Some Girls Mark II for her. Again, I don't think it was the best time for her. I think she was falling out of favour maybe slightly, which is very fickle. It's, you know, it's...
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't put all the blame on that,
no,
actually.
No,
because the song, we didn't... give her the banger that they were looking for. Yeah,
well. I think, you know, this was the first album on a slightly different label or a different team. I think she'd gone to Innocent by this point. And also the industry was changing.
Lots of things. Yeah, lots of things going on. But also, you know, the right song wasn't there for her from me.
2005 was a really funny time to be a solo Spice Girl. Just in the way of like how the British public treat, like, you know, pop fans like us will just wholeheartedly adore them. But you know, we love to build people up and tear them down. And the public, Jerry could have come out with the best song.
Yeah.
And the public wouldn't have accepted it. So there's all these rumours online of that the third Jerry album was originally going to be called Disco Sister and was heading more that direction.
Oh my God, we did that song. Yes.
And that's a Hannah Robinson song as well.
Disco Sister Music.
It was just called Disco Sister, wasn't it, Joel? That was the rumoured album title.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'll listen to whatever Hannah says versus any online rumours.
Was there a song on Passion called Disco Sister Music, or have I just made that up?
Oh, I think it didn't make it, unfortunately.
Oh, we did do that. We did do that song, yes.
Oh, my God.
That does exist somewhere.
Wow.
Da-da-da-da lipstick, da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, how funny. Disco Sister Music. Maybe that's what we did with After Some Girls debacle.
I was going to say, I wonder if Love Never Loved Me fit more that vibe. And by the time you'd gone to LA, she'd decided it wasn't as disco forefront anymore.
Oh, maybe. I think we just wrote a bunch of songs purely depending on what was in her head.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then the curation happens after.
Yeah, that's exactly how it worked then.
So let's move on to our last artist. Similarly to Sophie in a way, someone it seems like you've worked with a lot, Dannii Minogue, or as we love to call her, Danielle Jane Minogue. The song we want to focus on particularly is You Won't Forget About Me.
Yes.
But before that, you were involved in Neon Night. So how did your first Dannii sessions come along?
Right. I think the first session, that was Barry and Jules, good friends of mine, Jules and Stone. Again, that was one of my first ever sessions. I think it was after Richard, though. I don't know. Do you know, I change my thoughts on that all the time. I just can't remember things. But
it probably is because Neon Nights was 2003.
Yeah. Oh, and it is 2002 was Some Girls, right? No, that's 2004.
Yeah, yeah. 2004. But I mean, it could have been around the same time.
Yeah, so we wrote that and I seem to remember being in another session and Phil Faversham came in and said he was just chatting and seeing what we were up to. I was with another producer and he said, do you have anything for Dannii? And I played that song, which looking back probably wasn't, but I don't know. I don't think you're meant to play other songs during a session with someone else. But he did ask and I was kind of like super hungry then. So I said, oh, we've just done this. And I knew as soon as he heard it, he was interested. I could just tell. So then,
and was that Hey So What?
Yeah, yes,
fun, really fun.
Yeah, and then she came in and sang that, and then that was that. From that moment, that was us and her, me and her working together.
So then on those sessions, you also had Come and Get It on the album for Neon Nights. Title sounds familiar.
I know. I was obviously running short on ideas.
To be honest, Come and Get It was another of my most played Dannii songs because it felt like a natural sister to I Begin to Wonder.
Yeah. So she was really into that kind of, I don't know, how would you explain that dancey thing she was into? She was kind of quite clubby back then.
It's JCA, I think. It's the Come and Get It record, who also did I Begin to Wonder.
Yeah, that was a studio in West London. And it was the same studio that I wrote Waiting Game with Greg Kirsten. So I seem to be in this room quite a lot. But yeah, Dannii came in and we did that. But actually my favourite session with her was the You Won't Forget About Me. And not taking any, I love working with producers, but sometimes if you've got a really good instrumental and you've got a connection with an artist and you go somewhere and you write together without the eyes of a producer and you just have fun, it can be really nice and quite liberating. So we went to the Strong Room and we just spent half a day working together on You Won't Forget About Me, because I think that was a bit like the Spiller thing. It was a club track that was already doing something.
And same with Who Do You Love Now, her other single.
It's
a pattern here, yeah.
So that was the brief. Dannii got sent the club track and you guys just spent half a day writing it.
Yeah, and I'm really grateful that she asked me to do that with her, because she could have asked anyone. But it was really good fun and we were really happy with it. And again, it just seemed so easy. We did something. We had fun. We delivered it. They said yes. There was no complication. It was just felt really good. She's super lovely. She's one of the most generous artists I've ever worked with. And that, she's just still doing stuff.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah, and looks incredible.
Like, we look back at it now, because this was kind of a standalone single, it's like, was this meant to kick off another album or what? Or was it just very much a one-off when you guys were writing it?
Sometimes artists back then, they would just get sent something quite random and they'd like it. So I think it was one of those. But I think following that, I did go in with her and Pascal to do some stuff.
For the Club Disco album, yeah.
Yeah, but no, for me, the Flower Power thing was the...
Was the chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Well, that is all our five artists. That's our selected Hannah greatest hits. But we need to ask you, Hannah, as a songwriter, there must be so much in the Hannah Robinson vaults, if you were, or sessions you've worked on and songs that have never been released. For instance, how a few years ago we officially finally got those Nicola Roberts tracks released, yeah, which was wonderful to get.
Are they the ones that were buried in a forest, or are they still out there somewhere?
The Nicola ones.
Richard buried a Nicola Roberts song in a forest in Scotland as an art project, but I don't know if they're different songs.
Okay, well, David, after this, let's get on the train to Scotland. Get
with your metal detector.
With a metal detector looking for like a USB stick or a CD. Are we in CDR era? Like, what's this?
Yeah, well, Crash and Head are the ones that got released. Hannah, you tell us if you think there's more, because we will go digging.
I think there is more.
But and is there any sessions or people you've worked with that really stick in your mind of like, oh, I wish that had got released?
Oh, I mean, there's a funny song called Birthday. I think I talked to Michael Cragg about that. That would never get released, but it would be funny if it did because it's quite a funny song. Because it was, oh gosh, can I say this on here? Richard and I wrote a song about anal sex.
Brilliant.
Love it. We were saying, so I basically said something about only on your birthday. And then it just went on from there and we just kept throwing lyrics around and we thought we were hilarious. Actually, probably looking back, it might not be as funny, but we thought it was brilliant. But then we sent this song out and the person that was sent in to try it with us was like a teenage Frankie Bridge.
Oh,
and I said,
God.
And I said to Richard, this is all wrong. I mean, do you know what I mean? We wrote the song and it was silly and it was funny. But again, it's just like, I don't think anyone's listening to what these songs are about.
Well, considering
so that's one of my favourites.
If she was with 19 at that time, I mean, if they're taking Rachel, Some Girls, and they're making that video, they're just like, oh, yeah, great. Here's a lovely track for Frankie to sing.
That's what I mean. I think they just hear sounds rather than certain A&R people listen to lyrics, but it just makes me realise that a lot don't. So, no, that was a fun one to write. There are lots of songs I've got on the shelf now, like the newer stuff, and I just think that's such a waste. I've always said that I'd like to just suddenly, I don't know, in a spontaneous fury, put them all on my Instagram for lols, but I don't think I'm allowed.
Whatever freedom you have in the diary, me and David will pop down with you and Richard and record this birthday song. We'll get it out there.
Do you know what? I might send it to you. You'd love it.
Please do. Were you working at all with Frankie on anything else at that time, or was it just that one track?
I think it was that one track.
Oh,
how
my
awful.
God. Poor girl.
I know.
Did she ask girl. What it was about, or she just sang it?
No, didn't ask. But it's the same with Some Girls. Rachel didn't ask either.
No. I mean, these professional girlies, they're just in, they'll record the track.
I know. I'm glad. I'm actually glad Frankie didn't. I mean, we would have been cancelled and it would have been creepy.
Yeah.
But I'm just, you know, but that's just an example of things being out of your control.
Yeah. Well, sounds perfect for two podcasters in their 30s to record, Hannah. That's all I'm saying. So obviously we've done a lot here. We've celebrated everything from your work that you've given us that we love, but what are your favourite types of songs to write?
My favourite songs are just songs that have a clear concept, have a catchy melody. I like things that are really simple. Yeah, that's basically what I like doing with people that I like working with. It's that simple.
And I mean, look, it really looks like, as an outsider, that's what you've managed to do. Working with Richard X, working with Sophie, working with Jules and Stone. There's always seems to be these people that you continually work with, which just seemed wonderful.
Well, those relationships are really precious. So, you know, just being back in with Sophie, it feels really precious. And obviously, I don't know if anything that I've done with her will come. You do have to accept that when you go in with someone for a long period of time. I think we've written quite a few songs now, but I don't know if they'll come out.
Yeah.
And I think you just have to enjoy the moment. But again, if they don't come out, there's going to be a few there that I'd like you to hear.
Yes.
You just tell us, you bury them, Hannah, and we'll go and find them.
Do a little listening session. We'll come over with some wine.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so much fun.
Is there anyone on your wish list now? Because you've worked with so many of our faves. Like, who is top of your wishes? I mean, we didn't even get to talk about Kylie, but I give it, you know, that's a given because Kylie's Kylie. But
yeah.
Is there anyone that's...
Do you know what? I'm being really honest. I don't kind of have... I mean, there's lots of people that release records that I enjoy. I don't really have a wish list of some people I want to work with. It sounds really dull, but I just kind of... When you're working with someone, whether they're new, whether they're established... And it goes really well. You have to imagine, like, at the beginning of a session, there is nothing. And then at the end, there is something. Mm. And for me, that's the best thing about it. So also, you can have someone on your wish list and it doesn't work out how it's supposed to in your head. So I don't really kind of dream like that anymore. Maybe I did when I first started. And I think maybe I've ticked so many boxes for me. Kylie was a box I wanted to tick. And I ticked it. I'm, you know, just I did one song for her, and that's more than enough because
it's a great song.
I had that experience.
We got an energy fast revolving round our feet, bringing us to life, and I can't beat the feeling that I get when I'm with you. My heart plays a rhythm in my head. I can't help but move.
I'm just really looking forward to being able to do more things. I like the surprises that come along. I mean, in terms of like achievements and the future, I just, it's so nice to have. So for instance, I'm not going to say what songs, but I've had a few, I think there might be a couple of songs on a couple of the drag races. For instance.
Wow. Ooh.
So we've gone from there, like songs suddenly having a, you know, a chance to do something new. I've had songs on films. The Antonio track got used on a Travis Scott thing. That's, for me, they're now the surprise achievements that still make things quite exciting.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, there's something really, really cool about a song that's happened and then something new comes from it. It's just the best. So for me, maybe they're my exciting times rather than dreaming of working with someone in particular.
Yeah. I think in film and TV, I think we're going to hopefully see a lot more of our fave songs get these resurgences purely from, unfortunately, not even the creative side. I think studio execs are going to sit there and go, we've seen the Kate Bush thing. We've seen the Sophie thing. What can the next things be? But then from our side as pop fans, I think it's going to be great.
I know. And do you know what? I do hope, though, is that they don't overthink it. Because I think at the end of the day, Murder on the Dance Floor was on that film because it's the director's favourite song.
Mm.
You know, as soon as you add passion to something, it becomes...
Also,
more
it can't
authentic.
Be that calculated because otherwise you lose the element of surprising.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of what the fuckness about it.
It was, which the, is what... it was the whole song, wasn't it? It was the whole song,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, only a super fan would play the whole song. I'm just glad, actually, that pop is having its thing in general because in the past, pop is sometimes... Oh, I remember when I was doing... the whole pop thing. You'd go into sessions and people would be very negative about pop.
Yeah.
It was so depressing. I was constantly up against people fighting against pop, whereas I always wanted to embrace it.
Yeah. And that you did because, you know, all the hit records that we talked about, including Some Girls Chewing Gum, yes, they were bubbly and frothy by sound and melody.
But they're cool.
But the lyrics, it's cool. It's got a bit more going on to it. Yeah. And there's so many of these songs that we've referenced. So, Joel, I think we're going to have to make our own Hannah playlist to come with this episode.
Absolutely.
Curated by us.
Absolutely.
And, of course, Hannah, let us know any must-haves in there that you want.
Yeah.
You know, that push.
Yeah. Oh, bless you. That's lovely.
Hannah, what have we got to include on it?
Gosh, right. Okay, so I'm going to say Bittersweet, Lana Del Rey, Lolita, obviously Some Girls. What else? Antonio, actually. Annie's Antonio, because I just think... That song's been kind to me for more reasons than one. So yeah.
How was the Lana Del Rey experience for you?
Lana Del Rey, she was brilliant. I knew as soon as she floated up the stairs at Liam Howe's house that she was a superstar. She had this authenticity. She isn't just kind of someone that rocks up in a tracksuit and then kind of turns into something else later. I mean, she's, I don't know. You know, like those old kind of actresses that with a cigarette on a stick. She has
classic
that kind
Hollywood.
Of energy. Yeah, classic Hollywood. And she was wearing something that kind of looked a bit like a cheerleader's outfit, but it wasn't a cheerleader. Anyway, she looked amazing. We wrote Lolita that day. She was super... At that point, all the songs existed, video games existed, everything. The album was there.
Wow.
And no one was interested.
Wow.
And she was giving up. And then, so we'd done Lolita, then we were going to do another song. And she suddenly said, this isn't working for me. I think we should do something like Lady Gaga or Britney Spears. And it was Liam that said, you'd be mad. You'd be just wasting a whole album's worth of work. It's an amazing body of work that needs to be heard. Mm. Stick to your guns. And she got quite upset, understandably, because she wanted to try this new thing and he was saying no. So we never got that second song finished. But he was right.
Yeah.
He was
right. It
is
a classic album.
It's amazing. And she's amazing. Yeah. And now, gosh, she's really... It's just her career's got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
I know. It doesn't feel that long ago that that album came out, but I remember video games getting that buzz first on SoundCloud and people were sharing the YouTube video that looked very homemade, very DIY.
You know, I think her DIY DIY videos were better than the expensive ones.
There's a certain kind of authenticity there. And I think Lolita kind of really fits into that album and that theme. And, you know, it really helped complete the picture of who she is presenting on this project.
Yeah. No, she's phenomenal. So, I think she'll be someone that's around for a long time to come.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And again, I know that voice in an instant too.
And I mean, last summer, sold out Hyde Park. And imagine your experience of her. She's like nearly going to bin everything and just go for a pop sound.
No, I know. I know.
That is wild.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because obviously it would have been nice to have done more songs and a moment in time meant that didn't happen. But the alternative, I think, would have been going down the Lady Gaga route and it still wouldn't have happened. So I think it was a no-win situation there.
Yeah. Well, Hannah, I'm going to plant this seed. If you're saying you've got these songs on the shelf, I think we need...
Hundreds.
Hundreds. I think you need to pick your faves and we need a one evening live with Hannah Robinson.
Yeah. I'd just be happy to come round to your house and play them.
All right, great. Well, anytime. The door's open. but Hannah, honestly, you're one of our favourite songwriters. And since
Thank
we started you. This podcast 5 years ago, you've been a dream guest of ours. So this has been an absolute thrill to have you on and we can't thank you enough.
Oh, no, thank you. I love it. I've had so much fun.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. Where can everyone follow you and find you online?
I am on Instagram @HazaRozaSongs. And it's the same for Twitter. Or no, Twitter's just Hazarosa, actually.
There we go. And the links to follow Hannah will be in the episode description. Hannah, thank you so much for being with us here today. Thank you so much
for your time.
Thank you.
Wowee, David. The HR of pop with us here and right back at you. That was incredible.
This is the best HR meeting I've ever had.
We get to stay pop podcasters for another day.
Joel, honestly, what a thrill and what a great... You can tell she just genuinely loves pop music so much, and it is reflected in all these songs. Like we said, we listen to these songs all the time still, but if you need a little refresher, please go check out our playlist. We're definitely going to put one together with, obviously, Hannah's input of those songs that she said to check out. But Joel, honestly, we love her so much and so happy and excited to see what may or may not come out with the Sophie album.
I know. I mean, I'm just thrilled regardless that it's so wonderful to hear those relationships still going strong. But David, seriously, we have wanted Hannah on this podcast since we started.
Yeah. And those stories. And do you know what it is as well for me, selfishly? It's just to be able to tell the songwriters that your songs have done so much for me. Like, I really meant it when I say China Heart, Love Never Loved Me, and, you know, You With Your Rachel album tracks. We love these songs. So to be able to tell her that is just a huge indulgence for us.
Absolutely huge indulgence.
That's what you do a podcast for, right? Just to get your favourite songwriters on and tell them that.
That's what we do a podcast for. Anyway, listeners, I hope this has been as thrilling for you as it has been for us. You have been listening to Right Back At Ya, the HR of Pop approved podcast, the 2000s pop music podcast. You can follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. You can email our hearts rightbackpod@gmail.com. You can follow me at Dr_JoelB, and you can follow him at
@lovelimmy, and check out my display on there.
Oh yeah, and that is a Hannah approved display, David. The songwriters are looking, so you have to keep it at a standard. The pressure is on.
Absolutely.
All right, listeners, until next time. Bye.